All right, let's go around the NFL first with a few news and notes. One is Darrell Taylor. Happy trails to the gentleman. Just returned from IR, and he will be moving on from the team as they need a spot for Jalen Reed, who is returning from IR. So it feels like it made sense. He's being released today per Aaron Wilson of KPRC too, and I feel like it made sense. He brought him in. Single year deal, and just wanted to see what you could have from an additional edge rusher, more of a speed guy, a little bit smaller, and that just didn't feel like it settled in for what you needed as a pass rushing team. And I don't think he was bad per se, but just what you have was so much better, and it all fit a little bit better with guys like Horton and Barnett that can utilize their size.
Yeah,
the quickness of Darrell Taylor didn't seem like it melded well with what you were doing, but. Yeah, I mean, he came in. It was worth a good effort to continue to give D'Amico Ryans more tools and weapons with this defense.
Yeah, for sure. It makes all the sense, especially, you're bringing in another safety position. Also, Ian Rapoport reporting this morning, we didn't mention this, Davis Mills did not travel.
He didn't.
With the team.
For good reason, though.
On the charter. Wife had a baby.
Yeah.
And Rapoport is now saying that he is, I guess, on his way. He's flying.
Yeah, he ain't flying with the team. He's flying there today. I guess.
And so he's on his way.
Congratulations.
We'll be available. Yes.
Yeah, congratulations to him. When I did see that email come across, was that yesterday? I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think that you'll need him. However, that's a little disconcerting, but no, he'll ultimately make it.
I don't know about that. I don't think you need him stuff, man. Well, quarterback get hurt.
Yeah. That's exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But no need for any of those worries. All celebration as a welcome to the newest Mills in the world. Another Money Mills out here in these streets. Also, celebrations are in order for three Houston Texans who are all pros.
All pro, man.
Will Anderson Jr., which, do we have the audio here? I forgot about this one. And I might not have gotten it because I did forget. But Will Anderson Jr. finding out in a way that was a little bit odd. He thought that he was setting up an interview to talk with ESPN's Laura Rutledge. And then all of a sudden he's talking to somebody else. And he just took this as, well, somebody else is talking to me, you know, getting me ready. And then they broke it to him that he is a first team all pro. The man nearly fell out. He fell out of the frame. He was apoplectic in various different ways. Well deserved first team.
He was who?
Apoplectic. You can go ahead and put a drop if you have one. Yeah. It's been a while since
I missed a couple big words. You said something earlier. I was just like, huh? But you moved on quick, so I had time to play.
You just keep pushing, right? Yeah. But yes, a first team All Pro for Will Anderson Jr. A first team All Pro for the second straight year for All Pro Sting, Derek Stingley Jr. And then a second-team All-Pro for a dude who feels always like he is somehow underappreciated, Danielle Hunter.
Yeah, and didn't make All-Pro. I mean, didn't make Pro Bowl, but he's second-team All-Pro.
I never understood this. I don't understand this at all, man.
I mean, the Pro Bowl, it's kind of amazing that we still use it to mean anything for ourselves anymore just because.
But still, I mean, how do it make sense, though?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the game.
I'm an All-Pro, but, man, I missed out on the Pro Bowl.
Well, I mean, Pro Bowl got some voting elements to it and everything. It's become less and less important. I know for me, when we start talking about Hall of Fame accolades or whatever, Pro Bowl is last, just kind of additional.
It's just kind of cool. Yeah. But you don't put a lot of stock in it.
It's all about
that's
all
the sense
pros,
you make of it.
Mind.
Yes.
That's the sense you make of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like whatever this is. But all pro, there's a pretty rigorous standard. And you know that in some of these, you got to be the top two, three, four in your position to be recognized. And so salute to Will, salute to Danielle, salute to Derek Stingley. I think that who would you view as the biggest snub? Because there's a couple of dudes who also received votes who were this close to not being an all pro.
Immediately you're happy, and then immediately you go to, well, who got snubbed?
There's two of them that you could easily make the case because they were legitimately the next vote in, although they were one place out when it came to votes.
I was thinking Fairbairn.
Kaimi is one of those ones that you could maybe look at. I think that's fair. The two that come to mind for me, Nico Collins, who was seventh in voting. And if you remember, first team has three wide receivers. Second team has three wide receivers. Mm-hmm. So he just barely missed out on being on the second team all pro. And then your guy, Jalen Petrie, Stafford's own, was just out as he was classified as a cornerback, a nickel or a slot cornerback. And so the likes of Derwin James and was it Cooper DeJean?
Yeah.
Also kept him out of that. And it kind of sucks that that's the case.
The man without a country.
Yeah. Emmanuel Acho was saying that he thought that at first he was classified as a safety, but then they made sure to classify him as a slot corner.
Yeah.
Do you blame that at all for this? Where do you lay blame for Jalen Petrie not being an all-pro?
Oh, yeah. I think, like I said, man without a country, you know, slot. Safety, who knows where, and maybe that affected, how the vote went. I think it's absolutely a factor.
I think also what's worth noting, and I think Emmanuel Acho was actually talking about this as well on social media, on offense, it feels like we've done a good job of accommodating to the modern era and putting some spots in for, you know, all-around players and three wide receivers with the, you know, pervasiveness of 11 personnel. Defense doesn't feel like, I mean, they have the slot corner, but it doesn't feel like it's fully acknowledged the different ways that defenses demonstrate themselves. And I feel like if we had a better representation of that defensively, that then you would have Jalen Petrie rightfully an all-pro this year.
No, and it's not just affecting him. It's affecting a lot of people. It's affecting a lot of people in terms of where they are, like I said, you know, sort of without a position.
All right, so some of these games wildcard-wise, there was some really interesting ones. Which game was most interesting to you, John Lopez, of the five that we got coming in here?
Well, clearly to me, it was Bills and Jaguars.
Bills-Jaguars. Bills 27, Jaguars 24. Mm-hmm. I mean, what caught your attention in here? Because I thought it was kind of amazing that the Jags actually did not – well, I guess it's not amazing, but they didn't embarrass themselves, which is kind of – they kind of become want to do that in the postseason. They do lose this game, which – haha, nanny nanny boo boo, right? But they did play very well. It came down to, for me, I thought Greg Newsom, like I thought it was just singular cornerbacks that looked really bad. And the thought that came to mind, and I texted you guys this yesterday, would you be surprised if Travis Hunter comes back and they make him a cornerback solely? Because they have answers wide receiver wise. They went and got Jacoby
Myers.
More
answers than I thought.
They more answer wide receiver wise. Yeah. Parker Washington, so on and so forth, who Parker Washington looked like he sustained quite a head injury in this game. But then you look at the cornerback side for the Jags and you go, ooh, you're kind of bereft.
Yeah.
Is this two-way experiment maybe ending just because of necessity of cornerback for them?
Well, I think necessity is the biggest factor, but also I think he could you're sort of not limiting him, you know, on both sides of the ball. He's just focused on one side, and I think he's clearly more equipped to be a cornerback. The other thing about this game that stood out to me, and you just kind of alluded to it a little bit, the Jaguars are for real, man. You know, we saw them at the end of the season, win streak, playing really well, winning games, but we were still kind of wondering about the postseason. They went toe-to-toe and easily could have or should have won this game.
How about your man Brandon Cook showing up in this, though?
Yeah.
Like, that was when I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Y'all not serious, Jags. Like, the passing defense ended up being an issue because you got Brandon Cooks out here styling on you. Mm-hmm. That felt a little wild.
I keep forgetting he played for the Bills, man. Yeah.
I did, too. Yeah. He made a couple of grabs in this game as he had three receptions. And I forgot who he was in this game in the middle of, like, between these grabs. I was like, oh, yeah, it's Brandon Cooks. And then later on, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right, Brandon Cooks. I just saw him earlier in this game. But I guess salute to him for having that kind of performance, because he looked good. Mm-hmm. Like, he looked good, which, again, I will use more as a opportunity to denigrate the Jaguars. Some other games that happened within this weekend. Second most interesting game to you. We're going to choose your own adventure here.
Bears-Packers.
Bears, 31. Good Lord, Packers, 27. This loss, interestingly enough, it felt like around the talking world, maybe the social media world of this, people started throwing Matt LaFleur's future into question. Mm-hmm. Did that feel fair at all to you that he could or should be fired after this game and their performance?
It really doesn't feel fair. It really doesn't. This was a meltdown. Yes, there were mistakes made. Caleb Williams, as we talked about already, you know, just made some absolutely spectacular plays. Boy, he is really coming and stepping up big time. But this was the Bears doing something that I just frankly didn't think they had in them. And Caleb Williams is the biggest reason and why.
I think that you see the places where Caleb Williams makes plays, and then you see some of the instances where Ben Johnson creates opportunities. And that is where you have the two most important offensive kind of positions for you on a team, which is your coordinator from the schematic perspective and your quarterback as the playmaker. both elevating what your team does, and they get you over your hated rival in the Packers. And I say hated rival for a very particular way.
Oh, they hate each other. Even
actually,
before.
Before I get there, can I take a victory lap?
Yeah.
And it's a very dumb victory lap. Colston Loveland, 8 receptions, 137 yards. Does anybody remember? You don't have to. It's just me trying to, you know, big up myself, which nobody cares about but myself. You remember when during the draft when it's like, hey, Colston Loveland or Tyler Warren? And one of the things I pointed to was I think a lot of teams will like Colston Loveland because he fits a little bit cleaner and he feels a little bit more typical of a tight end, but he's good at it.
Yeah.
And he looked it, not just catching the football, but also people talked about him as more of a pass catcher and not being able to block. He was throwing some blocks out there, baby.
Man, he had an enormous game. Absolutely enormous. And I was really kind of trolling you when you brought this up in the text thread. I've always liked Warren, obviously. You know, as the number one tight end, but he was huge in this game. Absolutely. He was their number one receiver.
He was by far. DJ Moore had a number of receptions for 64 yards, and he did have a touchdown within this one. But yeah, it was by far Colston Loveland when they were getting the ball to him through the air. So that was fun. But yes, the hatred that exists.
Yeah.
Have you seen, I know you've seen this, but these coaches do not like each other. And it seems like it dates as far back as, at least publicly, Ben Johnson's, his introductory press conference for the Bears, in which he said that he has enjoyed beating Matt LaFleur, the head coach of the Packers. And there have been three meetings, obviously two in division and now this postseason game, where the postgame handshakes have been very quick. The first one was Matt LaFleur very quickly moving away, and the other two were Ben Johnson. This one, he felt like he barely went skin to skin on the hands
sure,
and then
touched.
Turned away.
he was laughing when he did it. He was laughing. You see the other angle, he was just laughing in his face and shook his hand for a millisecond. Here's where I am with this feud. Now, Bears and Packers, one of the best heated rivalries in all of sports, whether fans, players, coaches, all that. But to me, this is like the silliest feud. There's got to be more to it. They have to have had some sort of beef already. And that's what led to Ben Johnson talking about, hey, I'd like to beat him twice. It's like, that's why you're mad? Because he said, I like to beat the Packers twice a year? Who doesn't? You know, who doesn't want to beat their division rival twice?
Well, the idea of him saying, I like beating the Packers twice a year, and he was like, I enjoy beating Matt LaFleur. There's clearly something.
It's got
to
be more.
That they have had dating back to those games that they played, which is funny because they're both offensive play callers.
Yeah.
I would have thought that maybe if this came to the fore, it had been the Packers' defensive play caller because, you know, that time with the Lions, Ben Johnson was calling an offense against them.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened between them. And at this point, y'all have made it my problem, right? If y'all just kept this behind, I would not care. Y'all have made it my
y'all
problem.
Went so public.
Somebody tell me what happened, right? Like, somebody tell me, did he take your girl, right?
What happened?
Did he not pay you back?
We in the Facebook comments like, what happened?
Yeah. Y'all brought this to the internet, so y'all got to tell me how this came to be.
Give us some privacy and all that stuff. No, we here now.
But isn't it silly on the surface?
I think it's very silly.
It is.
Especially if there's no context to it.
Yeah.
Like, don't just give us, I hate the Bears or I hate the Packers. Nah, man. Come on now.
Mm-hmm. But also, I kind of do enjoy instances where we get real hatred within a white rivalry, man. It makes it a different level. Mm-hmm. We got time for one more.
49ers, Eagles.
49ers, 23. Eagles 19 in a battle, a game that still managed to be good, even though both of these teams looked not as great for various reasons. The Eagles, because they have been underachievers for a number of years, particularly offensively, where the run, throw the ball deep idea did not work again.
Mm-hmm.
The Niners, this is such a great performance from the Niners, even as they lost more and more players. Obviously, you don't have Fred Warner in the middle of your defense. They managed to make that work.
Mm-hmm.
They lose George Kittle in the midst of this game to an Achilles injury. It's a regular season award, but did this highlight Kyle Shanahan's coach of the year, perspective
or
capabilities?
You
don't think so?
He won't win it, but what a freaking job that Kyle Shanahan did, even in the course of the game, losing George Kittle, which, by the way, my man drank an entire bottle of tequila, reportedly. Apparently,
that sounds about right.
Apparently,
that sounds
about right. The owner went down there, said, what do you need? Obviously, Achilles. I think they've even reported torn Achilles.
Yes.
And so he's done for quite a while. And he said, I want a bottle of Patron. Owner sent it down there. And then Diana Rossini reported the bottle was empty.
Hey, why not at this point?
He drank an entire bottle of tequila. So there's that. There's Shanahan. there's the ability to win this game shorthanded on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
Badly.
Yep.
And that's not even, to me, the biggest story.
Okay, what's the biggest story in your mind?
You can justify firing Sirianni. I think...
Yet another blow-up with A.J. Yeah. Brown, very visibly on the sideline.
It wouldn't even be surprising because it's Philly. They fire people pretty quickly.
Not only would it not be surprising, I think you can justify it. A year removed from winning the Super Bowl, the A.J. Brown blow-up that he had on the sideline, previous sort of A.J. Brown and others questioning, you know, Sirianni, the way they just completely imploded, looked lost, you know, lost at various moments in this game, disjointed offensively, like they did so much talent. That's ultimately what haunts a lot of coaches. How can you lose with this talent that you have? Like, normally I would be like, come on, the guy just won a Super Bowl last year. I think you can justify it.
This is Kevin Stefanski, entirely different person. Nick Sirianni's response post game to what was being said between him and A.J. Brown on the sidelines.
Yeah, you know, I was trying to get him off the field, you know, because we were about to punt, and that was really it. So I love A.J. I think he knows how I feel about him. I have a special relationship with him. Probably went through every emotion you can possibly have together. We've laughed together. We've cried together. We've yelled at each other, but I love him.
You weren't getting him off the field. That was the portion of the program where you've yelled at each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know me. I've been somewhat of a Sirianni hater here because the question has been, why does your offense, you as an offensive guy, constantly look like this?
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Petullo absolutely is not going to be there next year. He's been bad for them. However, in this game, you see there's a lack of pride and a lack of get it done on that side with damn near all of your primary playmakers dropping balls or not making plays.
Yeah.
Devontae Smith drops. Mm-hmm. Obviously, A.J. Brown, notably a number of drops. Goddard, who made a play but also had a drop in this game. And then even your quarterback did not look all that great. Saquon didn't look all that great. Some of this you have to take to the players, but then I think indirectly all of this points back to why do your players not look inspired, mm-hmm. and why is your schematics look so damn bad in this moment? That's been the question I've had for Sirianni, but we'll see ultimately how that plays out. And then A.J. Brown, man, that does look nasty for you to have all of this, why am I not involved, and then in the instances where you are, drop catchable football. So that's some of the stuff that happened around the NFL wildcard weekend. We didn't even get to one of the weirdest ones, the one that started us off, Rams-Panthers. Maybe we'll find time as we continue on in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. But coming up next, there's a lot of Knicks on this team. Nick Cayley. Talked on Friday, and I thought he had some interesting things to say about this offense headed into this wildcard game. We'll break that down next. In the loop here on Sports Radio 610 on a Texans wildcard game day here in the great city of Houston. That's John Lopez. I'm Reginald Atatula. Figgy Fig on the ones and twos. And you on the text line, 713-572-4610, or on the Mo Karam Injury Lawyer live streams, YouTube page, Sports Radio 610, Twitch chat, 610 Houston.
Jump in the chats, man.
100%. Yeah, man.
It's game day.
We're calling it a virtual tailgate in there where folks are having fun. And also, I'm seeing that our guy Ray on the YouTube page, I don't know where you were flying to, but they said, man, I missed my flight, and now I'm going to be flying during the majority of the game, if not all of it. That stinks. That is rough. You pay for the internet, right? In-flight internet so I can watch it, right? It's got to. You got to.
Do you even...
You can't land and then just see what happened during the game.
Was he going to the game? Or is he just flying somewhere?
Is that what he said? I don't know if he said that he was going to the game. I just know that he's on a flight.
That would be different.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be different if he's just going on a trip or a business trip or whatever. But if he's going to the game, I say you don't go.
I say you just say,
screw it, go home.
Yeah, flying to Virginia for work. So you're just flying for work.
Gotcha. Well, then internet. That's an easy
thing. But you got to buy the internet.
You better hope that flight got Wi-Fi.
And just hope that the internet's actually
good. I've been on some flights where it's like, sorry, the Wi-Fi ain't working on this one. I'm like,
can you imagine your
more
team
times
is playing?
Than you wish.
Your team is playing in the playoffs. Yeah. It happens so rarely in the course of a 365 day year. There's only a few days where that can happen, and you just happen to be on a flight during it.
Yeah.
That is sick. That would hurt me. I would be so sad.
It was a couple times where I had an event that I had to work that was scheduled months and months in advance.
Yeah.
And then it just so happened, it was a game going on that day where I'm like, damn, I can't get out of it.
You got to figure out a way, man.
Also, appreciation to Intrepid reporter Brandon Scott, who was also in the virtual tailgate today, making note of the fact that the weird relationship between Ben Johnson, the head coach of the Bears, and Matt LaFleur, the head coach of the Packers. Matt LaFleur said they don't even really know each other. He doesn't know where this came from. Imagine You're just sitting here minding your business. Someone walks up and they're like, hey, man, I bleeping hate you. And you're just like, hey, what?
I'm just sitting here.
That happens more than what you think, man.
Yeah, but usually.
I can't stand that guy.
But how often do they make it your problem, though?
You know what I mean? I call BS on that. That's a sell. So? That's a sell.
Really?
Yeah. Because I don't even know. Because he reacted badly the first time, too.
It got to be something where he probably think LaFleur is probably a douche. Or something, just behind the scenes.
Just I hate the way you operate.
Yeah, you know how you shake somebody's hands. Yeah. You be like, man, I don't like this.
It's also Kendrick Lamar. I hate the way that you walk. I hate the way you dress.
Yeah.
I hate the way that you walk. All that.
I don't know anything about him, but I hate him.
I don't even like how you coach.
The way you talk annoys me. I hate you.
Yes.
Oh, that is hilarious. All right, let's turn the page now with no correlation to the previous conversation to Nick Caley, the offensive coordinator. Of the Houston Texans. He is going to be a focus point in this game and how it goes. On Friday, he was talking, and I thought it was very interesting. In fact, mentioning B. Scott asked this question, how does he evaluate his play calling and process of determining what's good or bad? Because it's going to be, I would hope that that's huge. Been the process that's happened this week. Here's Nick Caley talking about it.
Yeah, the success or lack thereof of it, you know, what were any of the issues? Was it a schematic issue? Was it, you know, in terms of how I assess the plays that we're doing, you know, was it a schematic issue? Was I putting a guy in position to have success? Should I have asked him to do something? I mean, I look at all those things. Was it just lack of technique and fundamentals where maybe we got beat? The play might not be, you know, may not be the play, but we can go back to it and we have confidence in it. We just got to go out and hit reset. I mean, there's a variety of things, you know, that we go through, and I try to do that every single week. I don't know, Landry, if you asked me that the other week. Somebody did. But I'm always trying to do that to improve myself and to learn from my mistakes along the way, too. So I think that's a big part of it. We're all growing, and we're growing together. We're first-year offense. I think we made a lot of strides in certain areas, and certainly I think we have a lot of improvement out in front of us, too. But I'm proud of how our guys have competed and you know, just their work ethic, and they're all in, you know, and I'm proud of that.
I like this answer, and I feel there's a lot to it because we've seen – we've seen the development. We've seen, you know, the progress. The one thing it doesn't quite answer, though, is in game, because what he's talking about is Monday through Saturday. And so I think that's going to be the ultimate test tonight. You know, how you make those adjustments. They're going to show some things that you're not accustomed to, et cetera. So I think the in game stuff might be big, too.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because there has been incremental improvement, which it sounds like is what he's speaking of there. It's just they're getting better, but there's still a lot to go. How far is that increment to this point? And then also, what's a great point is now you're talking about these one game samples. It's not about what you can do over the course of the season. Is what did you bring to this particular game and giving you an opportunity to earn the next game? And so, yeah, how
the
far?
The bullets are flying.
Right. And you can't afford one of the things that we've talked about. You can't afford these large lulls offensively. What has been done to get them to that place? And actually, even pursuant to that, Nick Caley was also asked what gives him confidence that the offense will be able to make sure to score touchdowns rather than leaning on the leg of Kaimi Fairbairn.
Yeah.
I mean, just showing the improvement we've had from the start of the year to the end of the year, just trying to continue to get better. You know, execution in practice. I feel like the execution's continued to improve throughout the year, and I'd say in the last, call it third, half of the year, I feel like we made strides in the red zone. You know, is it everything we want it to be? No. I mean, it's not, you know. But there's been improvement. There's been definite improvement. We just got to, you know, we got to continue to move the needle that direction.
All right, so I'm gonna channel.
You don't like. You didn't seem to like that answer quite as much as the first one.
I'm gonna channel what a lot of people say these days. In fact, you do it occasionally. You talked about improvement in the red zone. Has there?
Is it?
Has there been?
If it is, it's minuscule.
Yeah,
it's minuscule, and that might be the biggest one. Right, is getting into the red zone and actually punching it in.
Yeah,
that's. I mean, it's most important, obviously, this time of year as well, but. That's going to matter a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
What are the answers that you can see or that you think might be available to them red zone wise?
Man, this is one. I think it's just as simple as the play calling, the red zone prep during the week. What I just mentioned, the in-game adjustments you might be able to make, whether it's an injury on the defensive team, whether it's something that, you know, one of your players has been able to exploit in that particular game. I don't have a lot of confidence in the red zone. That's not breaking news for anyone that's a Texans fan. And when he says there's been incremental improvement, I haven't looked at the trends, the latest numbers. All I know is that overall, they still rank very, very, was it 29th in red zone efficiency.
It's not much higher than that if it isn't 29th.
29 is not incremental improvement.
No, it's not. And I look at some of the players that you would be trying to, you know, come up against in the red zone, and Joey Porter Jr. is kind of nice, right? I do wonder how you go about, like, if you wanted to go 50-50 type balls in those instances. Do you have an advantage there? We know that that defensive line is rough, so I don't know how viable it will be to try and line it up and move them as they have wanted to try and do at times. It's going to take real ingenuity for them to get in the red zone. Like, I don't think this is going to simply be, well, everybody muscle up, and this time we'll push it in. I think it's going to take real ingenuity. This is going to be interesting to see if he has brought that level of ingenuity, or if they found a different, you know, level of answer in the playoffs. And maybe the hope that you can maybe hold on to, it would be grasping at straws, I think, when it comes to their red zone capabilities, is maybe they have had something in the tuck that they are ready to unveil.
It's a good time
to utilize. It just feels like it would have always been a good time in the regular season to find more red zones. There was a lot of opportunities to maybe find your red zone voice, so to say. But
here's the other thing, real quick. I hope I'm wrong on this, and I hope they have success if they do this. But if they just try to, you know, ram it down the middle of their throw, up the middle of their, you know, their defense, I don't have any confidence in that. Not with Cam Hayward, not with their interior defensive line. You're right. You know, there has to be something they've had sort of in their back pocket, something that maybe can be creative. Because if they just try to just either sneak the ball or turn and run the ball up the middle, I don't have a lot of confidence.
Speaking of Pittsburgh, this was Kaylee on Pittsburgh's defense and the similarities to defenses that they played early on in the season.
Yeah, well, we're always trying to learn. And I know a couple weeks back, you know, I was asked about some of the pressures. We're always trying to work on issues that come up, correcting things, whether it's problem pressures, even things that come up throughout the league that we see that are trends and stuff. We're always trying to get ahead of it. So it's a matter of learning and learning from our mistakes and being able to grow from that, and then being able to assess what each team's doing and put a good protection plan together. And this is going to be a tremendous challenge. You look at the edges. I mean, I think Hayward's playing as good a football as I can ever remember him playing. So they are an outstanding defense, and their front gets them going. So we got to be at our best. Be a great challenge, and, you know, got to go out there and play.
Where do you feel most confident? Not just red zone, but in crucial situations, third downs, fourth downs, with this offense against that Steelers defense?
If you can protect, I feel good about your opportunities.
That's where I was going. That's why I asked, because the protection of the line has been better. We know that.
They have been better. Now, one thing that the Steelers will do is they will stunt. They'll have some of these, you know, they'll have stunts on the front end, or they'll have some simulated pressures. Now, they don't do it to the point where you look at them and you go, that is one of the most stuntingest or most, you know, twistingest
active
defenses in the league. But they do all of it a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. They dabble in all of those things. And this will be a very interesting test, because this offensive line has gotten better in that regard. But to what degree, especially when you raise the level of caliber of players, we talk about Highsmith, you talk about TJ Watt, you talk about Cam Hayward, those caliber of players doing those things, are they going to be able to hold up? But this is where all the praise that has been heaped on Jake Andrews in the middle for communication, this is where I'm going to really need to see it put, you know, rubber to road. Mm-hmm. Are they all on their P's and Q's? Are your running backs continually doing the good job of stepping up in pass protection? And then a CJ Stroud keeping his eyes downfield and with confidence knowing where to go with the football. I think that that's where it's going to be interesting, having those protection answers. And thankfully, I think one of those, you know, tape Tuesdays that the drive has done, you've heard Clint Sterner talk about, it seems like they're finding some more of those answers being put into their protection. So if those things come together, I like what they get on the backside of that with your wide receivers versus what they have going in their secondary.
Yeah.
But you got to keep it clean up front. So that'll be the name of the game offensively, at least in my estimation, for this game. That'll kick off 7:15, and you'll hear that right here on Sports Radio 610. But coming up next, let's talk about what's popping, including the Rockets on a little bit of a skid and the Houston Cougars basketball team doing nothing of the sort. We'll talk about it all next. All right, let's get to what's popping here on a Monday in the Loop on Sports Radio 610. Not any Monday, though. The postseason starts for your Houston Texans as they have the wild card matchup versus the Steelers, the final of what they like to call Super Wild Card Monday, but ain't nobody listening to that. It's just Wild Card Weekend, rather. As the Texans are in Pittsburgh to face off against the Steelers, you'll hear that one at 7:15. 4:15 is where Texans countdown starts with Sean and Seth. We will lead you up to two, where a shortened version, but only by so much, of the drive will take you from 2 to 4:15, and that's how the rest of your day goes on Sports Radio 610. It's been quite a turnaround for the Texans, as we've talked about a number of times, and that is what DJ Bieniemy writes about in his latest dispatch for ESPN. Within it, though, a very interesting accounting of what happened with the C.J. Gardner-Johnson era. We know the broad strokes of it, but it seems like he got a little bit of inside detail. Obviously, you'll remember week three was when it all kind of came to a head, the end of that game, where you have a circumstance where, you know, Trevor Lawrence is able to connect on a deep post to Brian Thomas Jr. for 46 yards that ultimately kind of ended up really making this game look really bad.
Yeah.
Apparently on that play, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who had jumped the route that he wasn't supposed to, compromised Kamari Lassiter.
Mm-hmm.
He made a mistake, and that caused Kamari Lassiter to get angry and voice his frustration on the sidelines. And I'm doing a segment that I like to call reading, which led to a mimicking response by Gardner-Johnson, who felt everyone was blaming him.
Mm-hmm.
The two never directly talked to each other, but the yelling was heard along the sidelines. All-pro cornerback Derek Stingley Jr. understood Lassiter's anger, but tried to defuse the situation for chemistry purposes. That attempt quickly morphed into C.J. Gardner-Johnson exchanging words with Stingley, almost leading to a fight. Aziz Alshire comes in. He tries to be the peacemaker, but then the heated discussion resumed in the locker room, and the interaction never became physical. That, DJ Bieniemy says, was when C.J. Gardner-Johnson's time as a Texan was unofficially over. I found this to be very interesting because this was all kind of, you could kind of surmise it, seeing it specifically.
You knew it was something.
It was something. Yeah. But I think it also speaks to, we had a lot of conversations about all these guys are here in the locker room in the offseason and getting work together. And that seems small. Danielle Hunter, on an interview that I imagine you'll see on Countdown before this game on ESPN with ESPN, he said that one of the things that he thinks made this team so good is how close they are. It might have been Will, actually, who made this point. How close they are, how they play for each other. Their accountability is not to themselves or to the coaches. It's to each other. And C.J. Gardner-Johnson kind of demonstrated that he did not have that mentality. And that is what holds this team together and makes them great.
Yeah, and it's more than one thing because it is that you could easily, presuming that is true, you know, that is DJ Bieniemy's reporting, and I fully trust the guy that he wouldn't go public with it if you know, hadn't been cleared and checked and all that stuff. So assuming this is all correct, that is a galvanizing moment, you know, for the rest of the team. Because not only did the Texans, you know, react to it, they cut bait with C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
Yes,
you know, and so that there's that aspect of it. Like, okay, we need to be, you know, bonded and tight, and you know, make sure we're all on the same page. And I think they kind of did that with their actions. The second thing is, from C.J. Gardner-Johnson's perspective, be careful who you choose your fights with. You know,
oh, Kamari Lassiter.
Yeah, because not just like as in a fight.
Yeah,
as in like where the team would be most invested. It's Lassiter and Stingley. You ain't gonna win that fight.
And then there was the thoughts about you know, the complaints about somebody getting paid, which would have been Petrie.
Right.
I feel like you hit some of D'Amico Ryan's most favorite players. Yeah, only thing that could have been worse is if he's like, hey, Will Anderson Jr., I also hate you.
Yeah, you're not gonna win that battle if it's them or you. It's you. You know,
but I think that you can make the argument that's been some of the issue historically with C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Sad that it didn't work, but very much look at the way that, as you mentioned, galvanized this team.
Yeah.
Very interesting. So you talk about that as an inflection point. Could this be an inflection point for the Houston Rockets, who finish out a mini road stint and having lost all three of the games, the two games in Portland over the last week, Wednesday and Friday, they lose on Friday again, and then just an absolute embarrassment versus the Kings yesterday in Sacramento, where it just looked really bad. You had Amen Thompson have a great night, 30-point double-double, but everybody else, you had Kevin Durant and the return of Alperen Şengün, they were mid, and everybody else was kind of bad in this one. Is this a galvanizing point for this team, as they have lost a number of games to teams that they had no business losing to now?
What's the opposite of galvanizing?
I have no idea.
Because that's where they're kind of trending right now. It could turn around. We all know that. But don't look now. The Rockets are the 7th seed in the Western Conference. That ain't great. And they're losing to the dregs in the conference. We've all seen the posts of the 13th seed, the 12th seed, et cetera, et cetera. It doesn't matter. You can't be losing those. And it harkens back to something that I sort of speculated on last week. So I want to speculate on it again. This is not a...
But it's not reckless speculation. It's just regular speculation. Okay.
I think it's regular...
Good, wholesome American speculation.
Run-of-the-mill speculation. This is a between-the-ears thing, right? I mean, this is... Because it's effort when you're losing to those types of teams. Ime Udoka has talked about effort. It's maybe sloppiness, not really being, you know, tight with, you know, all the things that you need to do to have that many losses against the bottom feeders in your conference to be that sloppy and to be the number seven seed and missing a lot of shots. They're one of the on this bad streak. They're on one of the worst 3-point shooting streaks you know you can have in the NBA.
Yeah, he very much in his postgame was very short, mm-hmm. as you might imagine, upset Ime Udoka to be, and he very much harped on effort, toughness,
yeah.
those kind of things. But I will hearken you back to the 22nd of December, where Ime Udoka has quote, or actually the 21st of December, "I've got to do a better job of getting them motivated in games against lesser opponents."
Yeah,
he took that upon himself late in December. It hasn't turned around just yet. And the playmaker thing exists. I see you rocking on the YouTube page. Yes, you're right. Fred VanVleet ends up being an undercurrent of a lot of the things that we talk about with this team. They got out-rebounded by a team that doesn't rebound the ball all that well in that game. There's a lot of effort conversations to be had here with the Rockets. And it's you can maybe say it's the doldrums of the season. They've had a lot of road games thus far this season. And maybe you could say some of that also impacts it. But none of that should hold them up to the point where they're losing like this.
Right.
And the Kings are making mockeries of you in the clutch time minutes when you have an opportunity to try and go and claw this thing back.
Yeah.
I think that is a real problem. But we'll have an opportunity to see the Rockets, and maybe they can get themselves back right. But, yeah, they're kind of harshing the fun of Houston sports right now. They'll be back in action at home, thankfully, at least, against a Bulls team tomorrow evening. A team that is not harshing the fun, the University of Houston Cougars basketball team, they absolutely dismantled the Baylor Bears this weekend, 77-55. And Kelvin Sampson was willing to say so. Right? You have two coaches that are kind of similar in that they're not really looking to get out here and praise their team and talk too glowingly because they very much are the standard is the standard type coaches. He was glowing about this team. He said that they did in all different phases and that this was probably their best win of the season. And that is very encouraging because you could see it. It's all the way across. It's young guys. It's old guys. JoJo Tugler looked fantastic in this game. This Cougars team is rolling.
We were talking about this. Went out to to dinner with my son, who's a proud alum, and we're talking about watching this game. Like, that's Baylor. They were doing that too. That was. I mean, they're not necessarily top five team, but they did, it was never even close. It was just a complete dismantling of Baylor in that game.
Yeah, without question. So shout out to the Cougs. They continue to handle their business. They continue to look like a great team. And it only makes the Big 12 that much more fun. There's probably four teams at the top of the Big 12 in U of H, Arizona, Brigham Young, and who am I forgetting? I'm forgetting a team right
Texas
now.
Texas Tech.
Texas Tech, thank you.
Yeah.
That might be the best four teams at the top of the conference that there ever has been in basketball. And this has notoriously been a basketball conference. Incredible, incredible stuff. You're missing if you're not catching a little bit of Big 12 basketball. And real quick before we go, a few things to note. KD passed Wilt Chamberlain for seventh all time scoring on that game Friday. Unfortunately, that they lost. Alex Bregman is a Cub.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you feel about that? Seeing Alex Bregman at least go to the NL this time.
It doesn't bother me that he's a Cub, but boy, he got his.
Yeah, he
got his.
Scott Boras
175
is damn near undefeated. It was 5 for 175 in juxtaposition. A year after the Astros offered him, what was that, 5 for 156?
Mm-hmm.
Or no, 6 for 156.
Yeah.
And so he very clearly got his. And it's because the same things that you expected from Alex Bregman. You got the production up there in Boston, but then Boston also raving about all the leadership and intangible things that we did here. And now the Cubs are going to go and acquire that player. Do you have any, like, this is just going to work out for them in your mind? Or do you think that maybe the long-term extension you start to see a level of decline from Bregman?
Well, I mean, it depends on the player. And I think Alex Bregman is the type of player that is going to, his game is going to, be able to last longer in this league. And he's really not that old. He's 31, at that position. Certainly it could hurt him. But this is it's going to be a $300 million player, man.
Yeah.
Over the course of his career.
Salute to him. he seems to deserve it, man. We've seen him up close and personal. He's that kind of dude that not only impacts you on the field, but also in the clubhouse. So good for him in that regard. And there goes Scott Boras doing it again. Did you see someone put out a thought out there? And it's nothing more than a thought. I don't want to get anybody riled up. Mm-hmm. That with the Red Sox losing out on Bregman, could they be interested in Isak Paredes?
Oh, I think that's absolutely a possibility. And in fact, I still think the Astros need to make another move just to sort of get rid of the log jam, you know, on this team with some of those players, especially on the corner infield.
So you're
I think
pro,
it's a possibility.
You're pro moving on from Isak Paredes. I'm not what I heard. Pro Did you hear that thing? I heard that. I'm not that's pro, what I heard.
I am not pro moving. I think it's something that's going to be considered.
All right. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Mind you, we have a giveaway of four tickets that are going to come up in this upcoming hour to one of the days of the Houston Automotive Show. So you want to keep it locked here for that. But also coming up next, the Texans are built for this. Let's try and answer some of the biggest questions that are going to come up or maybe might need to be answered within this game. 713-572-4610. If you've got some questions that you think they need to answer, we'll do that next.